The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the Nova Society are those of our guests and panel members and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of any institution any member of the Nova Society is associated with. The material information presented on the Nova Society is for general information purposes only. Reproduction or dissemination for the purpose other than education is prohibited without express written consent of the Nova Society. We'd like to welcome everybody back to the Nova Society. Today, our panel will be discussing jobs. The recent job numbers released for April that show a very strong economy. The stock market, which is hitting new highs every single day. And we ask ourselves, why does the American people believe that the economy is so bad when the economic numbers suggest completely different? What has got the American people so down on the economy? So we're going to be taking up that discussion. We hope you'll join us. So let's listen in. Instead of doing the third question, I know Scott's probably really want to do this one. He'll love this one.
All right.
So today, the new jobs report came out. They expected only 205,000 jobs. The United States added 303,000 jobs, and unemployment rate fell to 3.8%.
And the labor force participation rate increased.
Yep.
It's all due to immigration.
And the Bidenomics is not working.
Yeah, the economy is
trash,
gangbusters and roaring and all that kind of stuff. And the recession that everybody keeps saying is coming. Mohamed Al-Arian this morning before the jobs report came out was tweeting about the idea that, this is going to be low. If it comes in lower than we expected, boy, it's going to signal that we're going to be in a recession probably by the summertime. And, there are a lot of shorties out there who jumped on that bandwagon and said, yes, the stock market is due for a correction. It's going to drop and all that. And even the good news is bad news phenomenon didn't seem to be applying today. I mean, the stock market is up. It's all green on the screen. So whatever it is that we are doing, whatever Biden is doing, whatever we're doing with immigration, it's working. We're replacing older workers with younger workers. Workers who are eager for jobs are showing up at the border, asking for asylum, coming in and boosting this economy. It seems to me a really, really stark choice between the two candidates who are left, one who has lost more jobs than anybody, I believe, including Herbert Hoover. The other one who is just the greatest jobs president of all time.
Stock market's above 39,000. According to the previous administration, that was the signal of the success of the economy, which we all know really it's not. The stock market has really little to do with the economy, since 93% of stocks are owned by such a very small number of people. So they're the only ones that benefit from it. But using those words, well, the stock market's up over 39,000, highest it's ever been. The jobs report was absolutely wonderful. So I would say to those that when the previous president asks, as he's running, were you better off 4 years ago than you are today? The answer by the numbers is no, you were probably not.
Actually, he's changed that to 3 years ago because someone finally realized that 4 years ago was COVID. So well, now it's 3 years ago. But even course, so.
Who was the president 3 years ago?
I'm just curious. Does the you can tell how much I pay attention to the jobs report. Does the jobs report also say where these jobs are in the country? Like if there are more coming into certain areas?
So one thing that I did note was that in the former factory laden upper Midwest, manufacturing has not come back because manufacturing has now shifted to down south. And a lot of that has to do with energy rates and population changes. It's not equal across the country. And I think the thought there is that the number one thing being built right now in America is factories. And once those factories come online, there's going to be a lot more manufacturing job. Right now, what we're just doing is building those factories. And so the manufacturing jobs are really around that. And and the cost of electricity in some places is so high compared to other places that you're better off opening a business in Dalton, Georgia, for example, than you are in Dearborn, Michigan, a lot of other places.
Yeah, and that's very obvious here in South Carolina. Again, South Carolina was always an agrarian society, but today there are massive factories. I mentioned BMW is here, Michelin is here, RE Automated Systems are here, Fuji is here, and I'm looking at the unemployment rates. In Pennsylvania, it's 3.4%, Michigan, 4%. Again, we're going to Rust Belt. Wisconsin, 3.2%, which isn't too bad at all. Minnesota, only 2.7%, but places like New York, 4.5%. Connecticut, 4.4%. New Jersey, 4.8%. But then you come down south. South Carolina, 3%. Alabama, 2.9%. So, yeah, there's a correlation. The West Coast is being hit pretty hard. California, 5.2%. Nevada, 5.3%. And even Washington State, 4.6. It's interesting to see that there's a correlation there. But places like Texas is kind of like in the middle, sitting at like 3.9. So there is a correlation to the movement of people, and there's a correlation to movement of factories. I mean, if we dug deep into the numbers, we could probably tell where these jobs are. I'm sure they would say where the jobs are really being added into. I would be more interested, again, like Scott says, factories are very, very important. I'd be very interested to see how many of these jobs are agriculture. Because for many of the immigrants coming in, agriculture is the first place they go to. But now with factories, they are also coming into the factories. So,
well, you know what, Mark, though, I wonder about that because I haven't done a study on this or anything, but it does seem to me that the people who are coming into this country right now who are showing up at the border are not those unskilled laborers who go right into agriculture, but are educated. Like, you know, Venezuela before Maduro was a highly educated society. Yep. And we're draining that country of their best and brightest and bringing them here. It's not a bad deal for us. And the same thing is true. It's the same thing is true of Eastern Europe. And the same thing is true of Asia. We're getting some really, really smart, healthy, well-educated people to come to this country. And, you know, it would be nice if both parties were a little bit more welcoming of them because we're benefiting from them coming here.
You know, the Russians who left, very well-educated.
And I would totally agree. It's not like it used to be where they were all the people that were going to be picking the tomatoes. However, let us not discount those people. They are equally important.
Is that a pun?
No, that was not a pun. Let's not discount them because let's face it. I mean, they are hugely important to the economy. Equally as much as a skilled worker going into the factory. We don't only need those skilled workers. We need also the unskilled workers, those workers that are going to do those jobs that Americans simply will not do. And they are huge for our economy. You know, I always said, if you don't like your price of tomatoes today, just imagine if it was a bunch of Americans picking tomato plants. You raise that price. Because they're not going to be able to get away with the prices they pay, with the wages that they pay to the immigrants that come in. It's an exploitation. Yep. There's no doubt about it. Should it be corrected? Absolutely. But the fact is that all workers that we get, especially in the condition that we're in, and we are booming, and that's why people are coming here. I mean, and you can't blame them for that.
And certainly post-COVID, the United States has recovered with a much lower recession and a much better economy than other countries have, which I think people forget about. I mean, Americans forget. But that's what people are doing. They're not here taking our jobs. They're not here, for the most part, murdering people, and they're simply here trying to improve themselves, have their own vision, to live their own visions of the American dream. And they want to be here, and they want to study, and they want to contribute as American citizens. And I don't see anything wrong with that. And I don't understand. Well, I guess it's the creation of fear and the creation of the enemy.
Yeah. Well, it's the idea of portraying them, painting them with one brush.
Yep.
Them. And, you know, it's like, you know, they're sending us their murderers, they're sending us their rapists, they're sending us this, that, and the other. Yeah. Are there a few of those probably in there? Yeah, probably so. You know, statistically, yep, probably so. But then again, we are those of us in glass houses should not throw stones. The Americans can't do that as well. But I think that that's what drives the fear, is that every single time you see somebody from Mexico or you see somebody from South America, you're seeing somebody that's dangerous. And that's not the case. That's not the case at all. And we should really begin to remember that. Remember when going back to the history of the whole thing, in the United States, if you were Irish, you were nobody. And if you were Italian, you were nobody. And if you were Roman Catholic, you were nobody. So we've always had the other. It's changed over the years. But and there was one other about immigration that we could talk about. The immigrant that was deported 7 times and got back in, committed a murder. I mean, okay. Now, I'm sure that the right is going to absolutely beat up on that. But you've deported him 7 times. So maybe you should have passed the border bill so we could have had more border security people on the border, and maybe he wouldn't have gotten in these 6 other times. What do you think about that story, Scott?
There's a lot of myths out there, and I think lot of them are being promulgated by the right-wing media, which is, you know, not actually news. Sorry, folks. It is a propaganda wing of a party that doesn't want you to vote for the other party. And they're going to tell you nothing but bad stuff all day long.
Which, the planes landing in Detroit and having the Gonzaga basketball team.
Right. I mean, and anything that they can grab onto. And, you know, the whole reason I think that there's this mystery going on, you know, really shouldn't be so mysterious, between people are saying, well, my own economic situation is pretty good. My state's economic situation is pretty good, but the nation as a whole is in an economic doldrums. And why can't we just realize that they're constantly being told by their media that things are crap when they're actually quite good? And we've saw this before in 2016, when Donald Trump was elected, illegal immigration was at a 50-year low. The economy was booming, but nobody told them that. And if you get your news from a right-wing source and they're going to tell you that the economy is terrible and that immigration is like roaring across the border all the time and it's an invasion, and you believe it because that's your news, that's the news, you know, that's your information source, then yeah, you're going to be really unhappy all the time, and you're going to miss it. And that's what I used to say to my right-wing friends all the time during the second term of Obama. I said, you're really missing an amazing presidency. And it makes me sad that you're missing it. Well, the same thing is true right now. And a lot of Americans are missing how good Joe Biden is. Which leads me to my next point, which is No Labels decided not to run a candidate yesterday, right? And I'm going to make a proposal to No Labels that Joe Biden is the No Labels candidate. As we've said on this podcast before, nobody worked harder to get Clarence Thomas on the bench than Joe Biden. Nobody has worked harder to be bipartisan than Joe Biden. Why can't we come to grips with the fact that this guy is a no labels candidate running on the Democratic line? He never was my idea of a social Democrat, and it's, you know, his ability to reach across the aisle and work with other people that he might not really cotton to, people that he might not really appreciate or like, but he's willing to work with them. And he really has been a bipartisan success story, the likes of which we have not seen in a long time.
That is true. These people that want to bring back the former president, you know, you get what you if it happens. I don't believe that it will. I don't believe Scott believes it will. I think Brooke thinks it might. The fact is that you're going to get what you asked for, and you might not like what you asked for. And that's kind of the way it is.
I'm hoping I'm wrong.
We're hoping you're wrong too.
People who are still unhappy with Biden's Gaza. I saw, and I don't remember what this was on. It included, it might have been Midas Touch Network, a Republican congressperson. I don't remember the name of this guy either. I really should write this stuff down. He was having a town hall among his constituents, and his idea was to, for Gaza, his solution was what we did in Hiroshima. That's how we should respond. Yeah, and Nagasaki. Yep, that's how we should respond.
I think Trump actually said something similar to that yesterday.
Yeah, so if we don't like what Biden is doing, that's our alternative.
Yeah, well, here's the only problem, though. There's people that would actually think that's a good idea. I mean, we all sit here and say, gosh, you're an idiot. But the fact is there's people that actually might think, yeah, okay.
Well, for the people who are complaining about Biden and who say, well, I don't want to vote for Biden because I don't like Biden's, you know, what Biden is doing in Gaza, you know, in the real world, that's the alternative. I mean, like it or not, I mean, you can't write somebody in and you can't say, well, I'm uncommitted because Biden in the general election is not running against a write-in or an uncommitted or, you know, a butterfly or whatever. He's running against a real person. And if that's the answer, besides the fact that obviously we'd have nuclear fallout all over the place, but right by an ally, but apparently we can do whatever we want. I mean, if that's the alternative.
Look, selling Israel jets has nothing to do with Gaza. They're still in a very bad neighborhood, and they still need to be able to defend themselves. And, you know, we've seen the contrast between what they're really, really good at, which is surgical strikes against enemy combatants. And we've seen what they're apparently not particularly good at, and nobody is. I think we learned that ourselves in Iraq, is fighting a war in cities, you know, is tough to do.
No one's good at urban warfare. Really,
it's very difficult to do without leveling buildings, you know, unfortunately there are a lot of people in those buildings still, and it's, you know, it's an awful thing. Look, nobody hates Netanyahu more than me, except maybe every Israeli, and they were protesting him long before 10/7, and they're going to continue, and he's got to go soon, and they need to change this government. But, you know, so far he's managing to hang on somehow. I'm not really sure how.
I should amend what I said about urban warfare. I mean, the people who live there are the ones who are good at it. The invaders typically have a tough time. I mean, the urban warfare is not something that is not something to be taken lightly.
No.
By anybody. So
it's not. And I just saw a report that it appears that Netanyahu is not losing his grip anytime soon. That's being reported. I don't know. I haven't read the whole article under that. I'll have to really dig into that one. Guys, always a great talking to you. Care. We will see you again next week. Take care.
Yes. Take care.
So that's all the time we have for today's episode. The Nova Society is a production of the Phoenix Research Institute. We'd like to thank our sponsor for this episode, the Journal of Interdisciplinary Conflict Science. The JCIS is an open journal for upcoming scholars. The JCIS is currently accepting article submissions on an ongoing basis. The JCIS is a publication of Nova Works, a scholarly depository at Nova Southeastern University. A link to the journal is in our description. We'd also like to thank our podcast partners, Buzzsprout, who hosts the Nova Society, Audacity, who is our editing partner, and Podkite, who does all of our analytics. We'd also like to thank iHeartRadio, where people get their music and podcasts, Apple iTunes, the largest source for music and podcasts on the internet, Spotify, the most popular source for the Nova Society. The Nova Society is available on all these and other quality platforms mentioned in our description. We'd also like to thank our listeners. Without you, the Nova Society would not be possible. If you have a comment, a question, or would like to be a guest on the Nova Society, we can be reached at nova.society.podcast@gmail.com. Always remember, the power of society is knowledge. So for Dr. Scott Gershwer, Dr. Brooklyn Ann Weldon, Dr. Priscilla Hobbs, and all of us here at the Nova Society, I'm Dr. Mark Bound. Be well, and we hope to see you again next time.